Zimmerman's got it. That's a double play. It's going to be a triple play.
Unbelievable. This could be a double play, if not a triple play. It is.
3 outs. One swing of the bat.
And around the horn they go.
Jones, Tavares, to Galarraga.
How about that for getting out of a jam?
Third, second, yes. Triple play.
How about that?
All right. Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to our latest episode of the Triple Play Podcast. I am your host, White Street, joined, as always, by my gracious co-hosts. Well, sort of as always for one and not so much for the other, but guys, introduce yourselves.
What do you mean by that? Josh Wildcard Strickland. What do you mean by that, sort of here all the time? I'm here all the time. I miss like one episode.
I think he means me, Josh, as I am Tom Benchbat Cloutier.
Then yeah. why am I the other one?
I'm the lefty specialist.
I just make
the
stuff
right?
up as a go, bro. Yeah, there you go. He faces the three batters and then send him back to the bench. But yes, we have been away for a little bit because life. Bradley is also not here today because life, but we've got Tom in. Filling in, so welcome back on to the pod, legitly full, not just the Fantasy Fifth, Tom, so thanks
yeah,
for joining us.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm always happy to come by when you need help. When Bradley can't be bothered, it seems to be role.
But. Yeah, well, we always appreciate you coming out of the bullpen for us, but got a lot of stuff to catch up on. Playoff races starting to finish up / get in the full swing, so we're going to get into all of it right now. But first, actually, we are going to jump into a topic that's kind of old news, but we haven't been able to touch on it yet, so we're going to take a moment to do that now. The Cleveland...
Made it century old at this point.
Hey, man. Better late than never. But the Cleveland Indians, they had announced they were going to pick a new name, and they have eventually announced said new name. They will be changing to the Guardians. So starting next year, 2022, they will no longer be the Cleveland Indians, but rather the Cleveland Guardians. This in homage to the Guardians on their bridge in the city, the Guardians of the City, as they are known. And it's something that makes sense for the city. So just in general, guys, what were your thoughts when you saw the name? What do you think of this? Just in general... Is this a good one? Josh, start us off.
It's fine. I mean, it's not like the best name they could have come up with, in my opinion. It's very vague, and I mean, it's fine. I mean, it's basically they don't have to change that much branding, and it still rolls off the tongue like the Cleveland Indians did, because now it's just the Cleveland Guardians. It sounds similar. So, you know, good. I mean... I guess this is the best choice for them, but I think they could have went with something a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's really just... I'm not surprised in terms of I think the best choice was definitely for them to choose the Spiders, because, I mean, that was right there for them. It was a name of not... I don't think Indians-affiliated team, but I think it was the... a previous team that was in Cleveland, and they had cool branding and stuff, or at least cool branding has been made, you know, mocked up for it, which, yes, generally what people mock up is better than what an actual team can come up, or like what an actual team can use because they have sponsors and stuff. But I think it's very safe. It's as Josh said, it's fine, which quite frankly is what they needed to do. I mean... they're doing better than the Washington football team or franchise. They actually decided to come up with a name before ditching their other one, which is good. But again, they don't change too much branding. I'm sure obviously there will be people who still hate it 15 years from now, but I'm sure 15 years from now it'll, you know, not sound any different to us.
Yeah, it's one of those, my first initial reaction was, really? What? And it's simply because it's kind of bland. And, you know, of course we've seen, like you guys touched on, the Spiders. Like, we've seen other names that kind of come about that people, you know, something that could allude to the city's rock and roll presence, being the home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, that kind of thing. Like, people come up with name concepts and ideas, and you kind of hope for something that's electric and unique and new. Guardians doesn't quite feel that way. But after, you know, seeing more information, it's definitely something that fits the city. It works. It works for them, and while it's not the most popping name, it's not sexy, quote-unquote, it works for them. It fits the city, it fits the team, branding-wise, like you guys said. They don't really have to change much. Actually, they didn't really change much. They kind of went with a slightly different font. They changed up slightly differently on that front, but the colors are all the same. It's,
well, they kind of went with back towards what their font and branding and stuff used to be. They went kind of 80s, 90s.
It's an interesting
Indians?
Combination between their older font style and kind of putting a little bit of a modern spin on it. It works though. It works and it looks good. And one of my good friend, one of our top fans, Kenzie, she's a huge Cleveland fan, and she loved the name. She had told me previously that it's a perfect name for them. It's an homage to the Guardians of Transportation that kind of works with the city. Literally, I asked her earlier for a statement. I just got it. So I will read this to you right now in real time. This is perfect timing.
No proofreading?
No, we're just going to roll with this.
All right.
She said, first, a little background in the Cleveland and its geography. The stadium sits on the corner of Ontario Street and Carnegie Avenue, and coming into the city, one of the main roads is Carnegie Ave. There is a bridge called the Hope Memorial Bridge, formerly the Lorraine Carnegie Bridge. 4,490 foot long, built 1932. Four statues double-sided that are called the Guardians of Traffic. Each guardian holds a different method of transportation from the 30s, hay wagon, covered wagon, and 1930s era automobile, and four types of motorized trucks used for construction. She's actually still typing, so there's more coming. But it's essentially an homage to that, and it's something that clearly fits the city, works for them. And at the end of the day, that's really all you can ask for, is something with some kind of significance. So I can't complain about it. As an outsider, as someone who's not part of this fan base, I look at it and go, maybe I wanted more. But as long as the fans are happy, and clearly they've gone through this process the right way. They've brought their fans into it. They've kept them informed. Unlike, as you mentioned, my Washington football team, they're not sitting around twiddling their thumbs for 2 years trying to think of a name. They said, we're going to change our name. We're getting fan input. Okay, here's a name that makes sense for us. Let's ride. I like that.
I just thought of like exactly what it sounds like to me. It sounds exactly like a Madden pre-made relocation team.
That is true. That is very, yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. My biggest issue is that they're going to get clowned on when they give up like 10 runs in a game or something like that. Because that's the issue with the name Guardian, because it kind of invokes, you know, it's like the Defenders in the XFL. Luckily they had a good...
G-League.
Yeah, luckily the Defenders in the XFL had a good defense, so they didn't really get, you know, it was fine. But, I mean, if you give up a bunch of runs, it's like, oh, the Guardians didn't guard. I don't know, it doesn't really work in baseball, but still, they'll get clowned on for some reason.
I don't know, I feel like if Cleveland's getting clowned on, it's not necessarily because of the name, it's just because of being Cleveland. And I'll touch on that a little bit when I get to my triple play later. There's a little foreshadowing for you to stick around to the end of the episode. But, that's a new name for next year. Now we're going to bring it back into this year. All right. We're getting into the postseason push. We've talked about that already, or I've hinted on that. So let me bring it into that specifically. We know of three teams that have already clinched their spot. They've already punched their tickets. Just a playoff spot. They haven't necessarily won a division or anything. Although, let's be real, one of these teams is going to win their division. Those teams are, in order, the Giants, Dodgers, and Brewers. So we're looking at these standings. We're looking at who might be next. Guys, there's a lot of really, really tight races out there, and we'll get into that in a moment. But first, these three teams that have clinched thus far, what do you make of them? Because there's a couple of expected faces there. One of these we didn't really expect to see here. So, Tom, I'll send it to you first.
I think this is the perfect case of we expected it now, but like we didn't expect it at the beginning of the season. I mean, watching them all year, the Giants have been incredible without being incredible, if that makes any sense. Like, the Dodgers are incredible. You know they're incredible. They have incredible talent. The Giants are just a bunch of dudes getting it done. And, I mean, fair play, respect. I didn't see it coming. Now, I don't know how that's going to translate in the playoffs. Like, it's a good thing because you don't have to rely on star players. But also, stars usually come out in the playoffs. So, I think they've done a tremendous job. I think they're going to hold off the Dodgers and win the division, sending the Dodgers to the wild card game. But I think the real winner here is the Brewers, because they're going to have to face the NL East champion, which is going to be, quite frankly, easier pickings than the wild card team, potentially. And I think they're going to roll right into the NLCS because they have Dodgers-level pitching. And they have, like, they're kind of an in-between of the, like, their lineup feels like the Giants in terms of, it's just, like, dudes getting it done, but then, like, they have just absolute all-star ace-level pitchers.
I just want to mention that, Wyatt, I resent that you said the nobody here had the Brewers here, because I actually predicted the Brewers to win the division.
I was referring to the Giants, but all right, go off, sis. Oh,
well, still, I predicted the Brewers to win division, and you were not happy about that. But, you know, whatever. Anyways, yeah, the Giants is a big surprise. They're actually what I was going to talk about next segment, but I guess I'll choose something else. Yeah, I mean, the Giants is literally just, like, they only have, like, two players in their lineup that are under 30 years old, and they just have guys who are having career years. That's basically what's happening. I mean, Brandon Crawford, I wouldn't say it's really a career year for him, or Buster Posey, but they're both, like, batting their average is 300, and they're both 34, which is just, like, and also they had a couple seasons of drop-off. Like, neither of these guys were, you know, this good for the past couple seasons, and then all of a sudden they just kind of started raking out of nowhere. So, I mean, the Giants is just a bunch of guys who are having career years, and it's really remarkable. I mean, Kevin Gausman's having a career year as a pitcher. Alex Wood is actually not doing so hot, but he's a good number four pitcher for them. So, Giants, huge, huge thing there. And the Brewers are, like Tom said, I agree with him, it's about the same thing. I'm surprised the Brewers are doing so well with Christian Yelich still struggling like he did last year. Christian Yelich hasn't really played like the MVP he was a couple years ago. But Woodruff, Burns, Peralta, I mean, that's a tough 1-2-3 pitching staff to face. And that's a pitching staff that can get you to a World Series in the and win in the playoffs.
Yeah. To the point on the Brewers, I mean, I was wrong. I admit it. The questions and concerns I had previously about them, they have gone out and they have proved me to be wrong there. That's great on them. So I commend that. I mean, like you said, that's a hell of a rotation to have, and one that can really take them deep into the postseason for sure. And that's what you want. And this National League, I think, is going to be a dogfight. Because of that, because we look at these other two teams and it's the Giants and the Dodgers, and, you know, the Dodgers, we expected them to punch postseason tickets. We expected them to be the favorites. We expected them to do great after the trade deadline they had, and they went out and they got all these other great names to add to an already super squad. Like, no one's surprised they're here. The Giants, on the other hand, Tom, I think you put it perfectly. They're just a bunch of dudes getting it done. Like you said, like, nobody really expected this. I think we all preseason just kind of looked at them and went, and there's the Giants. Okay.
They're fine. They're kind of being the Spurs of the MLB at the moment.
Yeah, and I think the Giants kind of, this year's Giants are kind of a great example of when a team clicks and plays well together. You don't necessarily need the most amazing talent. Because we look at teams in the past that have gone out and they've just got all these great talented players, but they don't play as well together. And if you don't play as well together in a sport that is so team-centric, that if they don't click and mesh well together, you're not going to do enough. You're not going to go far enough. So many Dodgers teams over the past decade have been an example of that until this past season, right? Because that's what they would do. They'd go out, they'd spend all this money, they'd get all these guys, and if they didn't do well enough together, then didn't connect. The Giants, on the other hand, they got a team that just worked well together. they didn't necessarily go out for these flashy players. They've got some players that we thought maybe were washed up, players that we thought were mediocre, players we thought that were just too young and weren't quite there yet. But these guys, they've meshed well and they've played well together, and that has led them to success. They're a team. From every sense of the word, that is a team that is relying on one another. These guys have each other's backs, and you're seeing that when they step out on the field and they're getting the job done. And that's what makes them dangerous, in my opinion. Now, talent-wise on paper, did they stack up against either of those other two teams? Did they stack up against LA or Milwaukee? Probably not. But, as we've seen from the Giants before, you get hot, you got the right squad together, if they're playing well together, who knows?
It's going to be very interesting to see how they do in the playoffs because, I mean, they just don't stack up with everybody else who's going to make the playoffs except for whoever comes out of the dumpster fire that is the NL East. And I just don't know how well they're actually going to do. I mean, if they win the division, kind of helps them out, but they're probably going to play the Brewers or whoever comes out of the wild card. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about them going forward, but they're doing really well and they're having a really great season. So good for them.
I was just curious as to like where they would rank in terms of like stats because I haven't really heard much about what they're actually doing. You know what I mean? It's just kind of the Giants won again, and they are tops in the NL in OPS, and they're second in the NL behind, of course, the Dodgers in ERA. Like, right in between the Dodgers and the Brewers. And I mean, there's your two biggest stats, right? And they're just killing it. They're just getting on base, getting the people home, and then shutting them out.
Yeah.
What more do you want?
That's how you win ball games. And, no, I mean, they, you know, they're setting themselves up nicely, too, for moving forward. Because that's a squad now that free agents potentially may look at and say, I kind of might want to be a part of that team. And even if they don't, you know, even if they get into the playoffs and immediately get swept, they've still put together a good basis moving, a good base to build on for next year moving forward. So this is a team that I don't think is necessarily a one-hit wonder, perhaps. But I think that should lead us into the next topic, playoff preview of sorts. I mentioned our really fun, tight playoff races that should come right down to the wire, maybe even the last game of the season, perhaps. Could we even see a game 163? Who knows? But
I'm in line for game 164.
Oh, yeah. The National League East, as we've mentioned, a little bit of a dumpster fire, which helps in the fact that it's a tight race. But even more so, both leagues' wildcard races are super tight. There's multiple teams at play in both leagues vying for those spots. Which one of these races are you most excited to watch and see how it concludes by the end of the season? Josh, I'll send it to you first.
Well, as the resident Braves fan here, you would expect me to say the NL East, right? No, I'm not excited to see that race at all. I'm terrified of that race. but I guess since my team's involved, yeah, I'll go NL East. I mean, every team, the Mets are still technically in it, but nobody really thinks they are. I mean, the Braves have been on a bad streak here. They just got done with a series against the Giants, and which they lost 2 out of 3. The rest of their schedule is pretty decently easy. These two teams actually play each other. They have a 3-game series last week of the season, so I don't think they're going to reach a game 164 or 3 or whatever. So it's a tough one because both teams, the Braves have been through so much misfortune. They had a pretty good trade deadline to build that outfield back up. And a lot of those guys have really contributed. Like Rosario got a hit for a cycle today. Adam Duvall hit a 2-run home run today. This is just today. So, I mean, these guys have been helping the Braves out this entire season.
NL leader in RBI is Adam Duvall.
I mean, I don't know why the Braves didn't re-sign him in the offseason and let him go to the Marlins, which, by the way, when he played for the Marlins, he was destroying us every chance he got. So I'm just hoping we re-sign him again. But then you have the Phillies. I mean, Bryce Harper is going off right now. Bryce Harper's making a case for MVP at the moment. So the Phillies is a fun team to watch as well at the moment. Wheeler is doing really good. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough one. It's going to be a tough race here. 1.5 games back, the Phillies are. So I'm terrified of this race. Don't know about y'all. I'm sure y'all are fine with it. But I'm not having a good time.
For me, I mean, it's really hard. I think the NL East, personally, it's hard to separate it from the NL wildcard because they're kind of intertwined. It's kind of like the NL West has been all year. Because I think whichever team doesn't win the NL East, I think will fall into that second wildcard slot to be destroyed by the Dodgers. And
I don't agree with that one.
I mean, I think I know recency bias, having watched the Reds play yesterday, they looked, or I think it was yesterday, looked terrible, but they were also facing Max Scherzer, so, you know, give them a pass on that one. But I just think
very up and down.
You've got Bryce Harper, a guy playing at MVP level, who's leading the league in OPS. He's absolutely on fire. And he is the type of player, and this is why he was paid, whether you agree with it or not, $300+ million, because he is the type of person who could drag this team into the playoffs. And they have decent enough pitching going forward that they can win those tight games. And I actually believe, probably against my better judgment, that they will actually win the NL East over the Braves. But I think the Braves just have enough to outlast the Reds. I think San Diego is out of it at this point. I mean, I know they are close enough, but they just kind of run over themselves. So to me, those two are so intertwined that I'm honestly, and of course my team's involved in this, so bias there as well. I'm really looking at this AL wildcard, because there is, at least as of a couple days ago, I don't know who's playing who, so I can't, you know, completely verify. I knew that there was a game 164 possible, because the Red Sox, Blue Jays, and Yankees could all tie. Which I think is insane. And you have a team in the Blue Jays who, quite frankly, should be making the wild card at this point, because the Yankees are looking, you know, dog poo. They have the best pitcher in the MLB over like the past 6-7 weeks in Robbie Ray. And they have 240+ home run guys. I mean, who saw that out of the Blue Jays?
No one. And I'm going to build on that, actually. And I'm going to say American League is the American League wildcard as well. Because while that National League East race is really fun, it's only two teams. Well, the National League wildcard is still going to be incredibly fun to watch. And bias as a Reds fan, that obviously I'm watching that one very closely because I want my team to win it. But part of that race we've already basically determined. We know that the host of the wildcard game, that the first wildcard winner is going to be one of San Fran or LA. Whichever one of those teams doesn't win the division is going to be that team. We're just trying to figure out that other spot.
But which means more than likely that the team hosting the wildcard game has like 105+ wins.
Right. Which is friggin' absurd, but still. The reason I'm going with the American League is because you've got five teams right now all vying for two spots, and both spots are up for grabs. And three of those teams are from the same division. The other two are also from the same division, and one of which, the Seattle Mariners, I don't think really anybody, Mariners fans mostly included, expected to even be in this situation this year. And that's what makes it so much fun. Then you add on top the little cherry on top of this fun little AL wildcard Sunday, like you mentioned, Tom, is the potential prospect of not just a game 163, but a potential game 164. Because if there's a three-way tie, we got to play a play-in game to determine who plays the play-in game. And that's what's so fun about this, is the fact that it's currently Boston in the one spot at the time of recording, and Toronto in the two spot, but the Yankees are a game and a half back. Oakland's two. Seattle's four. You give this 48 hours, and those two teams could be completely different. And that's what's so fun about this race, is that every day, there's a chance that these standings change. Every day matters for these teams. Meaningful September baseball, and that's why I love this American League wildcard race.
The most interesting thing to me about the game 164 potential scenario, and I saw, so credit to whatever Reddit user posted this, is how the seeding would work. It would be based off their records against each other. So Boston, if they all tied, Boston would host game 163, as they have tiebreakers over both Toronto and the Yankees. And then if Toronto lost, they would play against the Yankees, but because they were having a, or whoever loses would then play against the Yankees and wouldn't get to host because they have two shots to make the wild card game. So then the Yankees automatically would get to host because they would be the lowest seed because they've lost both season series. So you could potentially have the Blue Jays go on the road to Boston, lose, and then go on the road to the Yankees and lose and not make a wild card game.
Which is just unfortunate. But yeah, that's why I'm just so enthralled in this American League wild card race. It's all going to be really fun to watch. So this is going to be fun to break down once it finally happens. But we're going to take a quick little break. We got an ad here and then our Fantasy Fifth. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
Hello everyone, I'm Tom Cloutier and welcome to The Fantasy Fifth. This edition of The Fantasy Fifth will feature results from the first round of the playoffs. In our first matchup, the 1 seed Buck Farmers defeated the 4 seed 100% capacity 628-589 over the 2 week round. The Buck Farmers were led by Juan Soto, who totaled 58 points with 2 homers and 7 RBIs for the series. Second on the team was Jose Altuve with 56 points, who had 3 home runs and 8 RBIs, but scored 17 runs. Meanwhile, 100% capacity was led by a couple of Phillies getting it done, as NL MVP candidate Bryce Harper totaled 75 points with 6 home runs and 16 RBIs. On the mound, Zach Wheeler also got it done with 70 points with 3 wins on the week. In our second matchup, the 3-seeded Castellanos' Drive defeated the 2-seed Better Than Babe Ruth 626-584. Castellanos' Drive was led by a ridiculous couple of weeks for Max Scherzer, who had 102 points behind 23 scoreless innings with 29 strikeouts totaling 3 wins. For the Better Than Babe Ruth, they were led by a couple of guys with 62 points. Andrew Benintendi had 3 home runs and 20 RBIs over the 2 weeks, while Triple Crown candidate Vlad Guerrero had 7 home runs while just 8 RBIs. That'll be all for this edition of the Fantasy Fifth. Stay tuned for our next one, which will break down the championship matchup between Castellanos' Drive and the Fighting Buck Farmers. Until then, back to you guys in your respective apartments.
Alrighty, thank you for sticking with us. We are back at it. Second half of the show, talking about the second half of the season. I'm going to jump right into this with a couple of surprises and disappointment, or a surprise and disappointment from each of us. So first, guys, team or player, who / what has been your biggest surprise so far this season? Tom, start us off.
Oh, you really caught me in between two minds here. I'm going to go out and say, I'm going to be Mr. Negative Nancy here. Most surprising player, Cody Bellinger. What are you doing? Like, I know he just broke a rib and is going to try to tough it out, which, quite frankly, you're having such a terrible season. Just go home, rest. Maybe come back and watch them from the bench in the playoffs. But Cody Bellinger has been so bad that if his name was not Cody Bellinger, he would have been demoted to AAA this year. There's not a doubt in my mind, because somebody like Gavin Lux, who just made it back up again, is much more deserving of that spot this year. Between him and Yelich, like, what has happened to those two?
Yeah, it's really strange, actually, because a couple years ago you had the Yelly versus Belly commercial that happened for MLB, and then after that commercial they just both have fallen off very hard. I mean, Yelich still has back issues that he's never really fully recovered from, which is very unfortunate for him. I mean, I still think he's good enough to kind of get out of this rut, but this rut's been 2 years now. So, Bellinger, I legit have no idea what happened to him. Cause he was last year, he was making huge plays in the playoffs to, win the World Series. And now he's not even starting.
I think part of the issue, I mean, we've talked about, you guys mentioned like the injury he's had, like Bellinger has been pretty injury prone to an extent. And I think that's probably been the biggest factor for him, honestly. And it's frustrating. It's annoying. But Yelly Belly, like, they've both had their injury issues, Belly more so. And I think that's been the biggest factor for him. I mean, that's even the reason why he moved basically full-time to the outfield.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Bellinger has still made, like, very good plays in the outfield and stuff. That is something that rarely, unless you are really dealing with serious injuries, you're going to lose, you know, this early in your career. But I just, out of interest, pulled it up. And Yelich has been he's got an OPS plus of 99. So he's been league average this year, which is bad for Christian Yelich, but, you know, not too horrific. Cody Bellinger, his OPS plus is 43. How? I mean, with a 159 batting average, that's how, but Jesus.
Yeah, it's not great. Because Yelich, I say he's struggling, but he's still batting 250. So it's not the worst in the world. He's just an average player at this point, which is still a drop off for him. But yeah, Bellinger is just, there's a cliff. He's like below, like way below the cliff now. Like he not only like jumped off the cliff, he like went through the ground, and now he's in China.
Oh my God.
It's I don't want to say it, but it's kind of a Chris Davis type fall dip here. I'm not going to.
Oh.
It's not that bad. Not that bad. But it's.
You're right,
it's,
because it's, they're only paying him $16 million, not $35 million.
Yeah. But I'm going to move on to mine. My most surprising team, we mentioned it earlier. Originally, it was going to be the Giants, but we already talked about them enough. I'm going to talk about the Seattle Mariners here. Because not only do they have more wins than every team in the NL East, not only will they probably not make the playoffs, but they have a -2 run differential, but they have more wins than the entire NL East. But the way they win games makes no sense. There have been plenty of times where they were in games where they had like 90%, their win probability was like less than 10%, and they came out and won the game. I mean, their team, I mean, they've got some guys who are putting up some big numbers, but not really. Their best batter is Ty France. I don't even know who Ty France is, but good for him. Kyle Seager kind of took a dip this year. I have no idea who any of their pitching is. Good for them. I mean, they started the year out.
How do you not know about Yusei Kikuchi?
I do know about Yusei Kikuchi. I'm sorry. I'm more fixated on Chris Flexen, because that's a great name.
He's flexing on them.
But like none of their pitchers, like their best pitcher has, their best ERA on their staff is 3.66. I mean, what? This is the most surprising team. Well, just because they make no sense. This team makes zero sense.
It's like how you said with their run differential. I'm sure that the ERA will correlate. It's the fact that they win small and lose big.
Yeah.
Like when they lose, they lose. Or they win a 2-0 ball game. Which, hey, 80 wins is 80 wins. They are going to finish, barring something absolutely disastrous, which would be very Mariners. They are going to finish an above 500 team, which is something none of us would have expected. And this is, keep in mind, we pretty much forgot at this point all the stuff that happened with them at the beginning of the year with their president or whoever he was. I forgot. But with all the team was pissed and didn't want to play there anymore because openly admitted to, you know, manipulating service time and all that junk. And we thought this team was going to be, you know, Pirates level. I mean, maybe not, but down there.
But they are 4 games out of the wild card spot over there in the American League. So, I mean, a lot of things would need to happen in the next 2 weeks for them to win the wild card, get that last wild card spot. But it's possible. I mean, it would be the most Seattle Mariner thing for that to happen somehow, for like the Blue Jays or the Yankees to just straight up collapse, or the A's to get off this hot streak that they're on. It's possible.
I would gladly sacrifice the Red Sox presumably winning the wild card and losing in the DS, or losing the wild card for a Mariners playoff run.
That would be really fun. I almost, Josh, like you, I almost went with the Giants here as well, but we have already touched on that enough. So I'm actually going to shout out Salvador Perez, who we all thought was older than he actually was at one point. But and this isn't to say that we or that I thought he was going to be bad, because obviously he's a very good player. He's an exceptional catcher. It's just the fact that he's got 45 home runs. He's second in the entirety of Major League Baseball in home runs, whilst also batting in 113 ribbies, which that puts him tied for first in Major League Baseball with one Jose Abreu. So this man is out here competing for potentially two-thirds of a triple crown, and the only one he's lacking is the 270 batting or the 275 batting average on the season, which, I mean, for a catcher, pretty solid. Not to mention the 45 home runs is now a major league record for most home runs by a catcher in a single season, breaking the mark of set by a 1971 Johnny freaking Bench. So anytime you break a Johnny Bench record as a catcher, you've done something pretty friggin' good. So I'm gonna shout out Salvi, because, like, not that it's a surprise that he's playing well, but because it's a surprise that he's really playing this well, especially coming off of a season where, you know, last year was 2020, and I think I don't even remember if he played last year, because I know he had a really big injury that kept him out for an entire season. I can't remember whether that was 19 or 20, but, you know, circumstances leading into this year have not been good for him, and he's just absolutely flipped the switch and said, nah, I think I'm going to go out and have the best year of my career. And hats off to him, because Salvi's an all-around great guy, and just 45 home runs as a catcher, man, that's absurd.
I mean, he's doing great for a 50-year-old catcher. I swear he has been in the league since the 70s, but he is not.
He's only been around since he made his debut in 2011, it looks like.
I mean, he just feels old. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But he's only like 30.
10 major league seasons.
What's kind of really interesting, because now I'm, you know, diving into his baseball reference page. Same. What's really interesting is I wanted to see the first versus second half splits, because I know that this has been a second half surge. What I didn't realize is he's actually, his batting average is only 1 point different between the two halves. He's just been slugging the crap out of the ball in this half. He's just hitting home runs now.
Yeah, because now that you mention that, I do remember the fact that, like, you know, he was kind of edging around the home run race while everybody's oogling over, you know, Shohei and Vladdy, which, you know, rightfully so. And Vladdy's been surging, but as Vladdy has surged, so has Salvi. And Salvi has gone from, like, fourth and third. So now, you know, Shohei once held a pretty strong stranglehold on that home run lead. Vladdy's overtaken them both, but Salvi's also overtaken Shohei now. And also, that home run race is going to be one hell of a race to watch, too, because as it stands right now, Vladdy 46, Salvi 45, Shohei 44, and somehow there's that dark horse of Marcus Semien at 40 that if he has a really good week, I mean, you never know. But, like, still, Salvador Perez, if you had told me at the beginning of the year that he was going to have a good year, I'd said, okay, sure. That he was going to have the best year of his career, I'd say, I mean, maybe. That he was going to have 45 home runs and potentially win the AL home run crown and MLB home run crown, I'd say, nah, there's no way.
Well, you see here, he simply just decided to hit home runs, which is usually a good idea in baseball. It usually works out for people. You know, his highest home run total in a season was 27 before the season.
He's hit 24 since the All-Star break.
Golly.
I think it really was just a matter of he got really pissed off that ESPN cut to an interview of Pete Alonso during his home run derby round. And he's like, here, you want some home runs? I'll give you home runs.
Yeah, right.
I was watching it at the time going, well, that's a bit rude. He's the only one they did that to.
It's because they didn't. They probably just didn't expect him to, like, do that much. That's
they probably didn't
thing.
Know he was still playing. They thought he was just a legend coming by. To...
They thought he was there
like,
for
oh,
the
hey.
Softball game.
We remember 2015.
Oh my goodness! It's just weird that, like, he feels so old, but he's really not. He's 31.
And I'm not trying to be mean to the guy. He definitely looks and feels older than that. But hey, you know, I think it's the catcher tax.
Yeah. Catchers have it worse than anyone else physically. And, I mean, have you, like, if you've ever seen Johnny Bench walk post-2010, yeah. Because he doesn't walk, he waddles. And that's the life of a catcher.
The price of greatness.
Exactly. But on the flip side of things, we just talked about surprises. What's your biggest disappointment?
I'll go ahead and start. Can I say the entire NL East?
If you want.
We touched on them.
Dang, you stole mine.
We touched on it earlier when we were talking about the playoff race. But this is legit the most disappointing thing about this entire season. Because this was supposed to be a wild race. Just like the AL East. Just like the NL West. It was supposed to, I mean, if you want to be technical, it still is a wild race. But, I mean, it was supposed to be like good teams in a wild race. Instead, you have the Mets, where their owner is tweeting about how bad they are. Francisco Lindor is there, and Javier Baez is swinging 50 minutes before the pitch gets to the plate. You have the Phillies, who they had a really good 9-game stretch, so they thought they were better than they thought. They thought they were better than they were, and then they got absolutely smacked by the Giants and the Dodgers. And then you have the good old Braves, who have been pissing me off this entire year. All the teams have had major injuries, so I will give them that. But other than that, this is a very disappointing division. I mean, even the Marlins were supposed to be better. The Nationals were supposed to be better, but then they sold off half their team. The Marlins are just the Marlins. So, you know, I won't.
Yeah, but they still have Juan Soto, who's one of the best players in baseball.
Yeah, Juan Soto's
quietly still having a very good year.
Juan Soto's having one of the best second half seasons of all time. In my opinion, I mean, he's hit MVP numbers just in the second half of the season. And yet every team in this division is trash and they're going to get blown out and swept in the playoffs. No matter who wins it, it doesn't matter. Go home. Don't even try. I mean,
in fairness, you were banking your teams being good on the Mets, an Atlanta sports team, and a Philadelphia sports team.
Just like to remind you, the Braves won 90 games for the past 3 years, so you know.
Good news, they're not getting 90.
Yeah, they're not.
Hashtag Atlanta sports. But hey, the Braves, Josh, do hold the only positive run differential in the NL East.
Which was not true, like, 2 months ago.
And now it's exceptionally high.
You know, yes. Our last podcast episode, you remember that? That was great. I had a huge Braves rant on that.
When do
listen
you
back
not
on
have
that,
a huge
folks.
Braves rant?
Well, that one was actually really bad. See, I really like that Braves rant because immediately after it, they went on like a hot streak and like took the lead of the division. They were below 500 when I had that rant, and now they're 7 games above 500. Their run Hashtag. Differential, is like plus 6 or something, and now it's plus 98.
Hashtag Strickland in.
Yeah. I gave him the good old Strickland bump.
It's the Strickland effect.
So I'm hoping the same thing happens here and everyone in the NL East just starts winning games.
I doubt it.
No, it won't happen.
Do you want the other teams to win games, though?
No. I just want the Braves to win games. But I said the whole division just because I talk trash about the whole division. So, it makes sense.
Fair enough.
All right, on the end of that, I was debating about going with the Nationals, but I think you got that covered. So I'm going to go with, it's kind of an obvious one, but the Padres.
Damn it.
Like, mm-hmm. I know they had some injuries, but you still have a guy who's probably going to be the NL MVP in Fernando Tatis. You have Manny Machado, who's being Manny Machado over the last few years, which is to say very good. But what happened to that, you know, four all-star pitching rotation? Like, it feels like they just never showed up. Maybe it's I'm not real surprised about Blake Snell. Maybe engaging in California activities and not being so well, but I really don't. And now I'm going to go out and say that they're not going to make the wild card. I don't think that's a real, big step there, but it's just shocking that this team that we expected, and even beginning of the year, they were playing really good games with the Dodgers. We thought we'd be in for a full year battle, and it was the boys down in San Francisco, not Sandy, or up in San Francisco, I guess. That's doing what the Padres are supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I hate to echo the sentiment. I wish I could pick something different, but I was like so dead set on saying the Padres myself for the same reasons. I mean,
I did have another team if you want me to flip.
No, you don't have to unless you really so desire to talk about that team.
I can mention them a little bit at the end.
All right, okay. I'll go ahead and say my piece then, because just to echo your sentiments, like, coming into the season, we saw the offseason that the Padres had. We saw the acquisitions they made, everything that they did. We looked at that team, we looked at the state of that NL West, and we thought, oh, this is a two-horse race. It's LA, it's San Diego, it's a new budding rivalry. And for a little while there, we kind of got a taste of that. But this Padres team has just not really been able to click the way we thought it would. And I mentioned earlier, the Dodgers problem, that problem that some teams have where you go out and you get a bunch of big names and maybe they don't click together. And it maybe starts to beg the question, is that happening to the Padres? Potentially. Obviously it's one season. Maybe they click better next year. Who knows? But it does beg that question, could this be that same kind of issue for San Diego? And obviously no one could have predicted the San Fran extravaganza, shall we say. But still, we had such high expectations as an entire baseball fan base for this Padres team. And for them to be piddling around at 3 games over .500 and potentially not even make the playoffs at all when we expected them to maybe win the division? It's a big disappointment as just a fan of baseball when we, like you mentioned, we all thought it was going to be LA-San Diego, and now it's LA-San Fran. But hey, that's the days of the 40s, I guess.
I mean, it's not even that they're in a tough division, because, you have the Dodgers and you have the Giants, of course. But, they're losing to the Diamondbacks. They're losing to the Rockies. I mean, they're losing to the Angels.
Hey, the Rockies are less than 10 games out of the wild card.
Well, they're... Okay, sure. Anyways,
They're 26 and a half out of the division, bud.
I mean, they're losing to teams... They're losing to teams that you would think they would not lose to. They're just free falling at this point. I mean, they've completely imploded. I mean, they built up this great team and we all praised them for it. But the issue is, this team, you still have very young players. I mean, Machado's still sort of young. Tatis is extremely young. I mean, and also it doesn't help that Blake Snell is kind of struggling this year. And, some of the pitching is not as good as they thought it would be. But, yeah.
I mean, we even saw Machado yelling at Tatis in the dugout the other day. Like, there are tensions and obvious frustration, but still.
Upon review of that, I actually like that from Machado.
No, I agree. It shows leadership because, and that speaks to the young inexperience of, Tatis and the veteran mind of Machado, and that's a good leadership on him, but it's still like, from a team that was as highly touted as they are at this point in the season, I look at it as they shouldn't have to have that happening, is my point. Like, you shouldn't at this point in the season have to have that veteran player having to yell at the young player. At this point, they should just be getting the job done. And the fact that they're not getting the job done is why said yelling is happening.
No, I mean, I'm not... I think in the heat of a, contentious playoff race, I think if they were in the Dodgers position, I still could see that happening anyways. It's just, you've got a young superstar of the league who may or may not have been thrust into being, you know, one of the faces of baseball a little early in his career. And, you know, he's about to get himself tossed arguing of umpires in a crucial playoff race game. I mean, you want your leaders to step up. And that could happen whether you're behind in the playoff race or up near the front. Now, the Dodgers, that it's just a different personality. I think it's something that actually comes with the Padres' swagger. Is that the word to use? Not so much when they're giving up bombs every other pitch, but
I mean, it's a fair way of putting it.
But yeah, I mean, that's something I'm not too surprised to see out of that ball club, but not necessarily, I think, in a bad way. I mean, you look at teams like the Giants and Dodgers, they're more older, experienced heads. I mean, even the young guys for the Dodgers, most of them all played in a World Series last year. So I think that just speaks to the, you know, this is the Padres we're talking about. Yeah, the Padres are supposed to be good, but this is still the Padres. A lot of the players around that team have not been in a heated race like this.
Yeah, but it's the Padres who went out and got Yu Darvish. It's the Padres that went out and got Blake Snell, who was in the World Series just last year. They got Mark Melanson. I mean, I understand your point of this is the Padres. So why are we treating them like something other than the Padres? But they have pieces on this team that have seen success. Pieces that they brought to the Padres to bring success, and it's just not working out.
Yeah.
I was speaking to their inexperience and stuff about the Machado situation. Obviously, I'm still very disappointed in them from a results point.
Yeah, I think that's just the thing for me is, like, yeah, they're the Padres, but none of that matters when you look at what they did this offseason. So... But, Tom, did you want to touch on that other team you had, or do you want to just, let's move on?
I just want to mention that, good God, what happened to the Twins?
That's a good point.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, this was a team that was expected to battle with the White Sox and maybe the Guardians for the in the AL Central, we all expected the White Sox to run away with the division, and lo and behold, they have. But, like, I didn't expect them to fall this hard. Now I know this is exactly the case of, one, they've had a bunch of injuries, two, they're now selling off assets. But they did not go out and really get any pitching to replace the arms they lost in, I think, Rich Hill and Jake Odorizzi. And then they just turned around and let Eddie Rosario walk to a division rival, and they were a team that was basically good at hitting a bunch of home runs, and now they can't hit home runs, so now they can't do anything.
The Twins is the perfect case study of they got a little too comfortable. They thought they were good enough to still have success, so they didn't try to really bolster anything down or try to get better in the offseason. They thought, oh, we can just hit a billion home runs again because that's sustainable. We can just do that every year. But obviously it's not going to work out. They got Andrelton Simmons, which wasn't, I mean, he's a great defensive pickup and he's a little better with the bat, but he's not the kind of guy you want to pick up in the offseason, especially when Trevor Siemian was out there at shortstop. Mm-hmm. You could have got him instead. And it just comes down to every player on their lineup is having a down. It's the opposite of the Giants.
Yeah.
Every player, except for Nelson Cruz.
Whom they have since traded.
Yeah, who they traded.
To the Rays, and like the least
year.
Rays move ever.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Baseball Reference still has Nelson Cruz on the Twins. But, yeah. Sorry about that. But anyways, yeah, every single player on this team has been having a down year. I mean, even their pitching hasn't been too hot. Kenta Maeda, he's on a 60-day IL now, but he's having a bad year.
The Twins did this fun thing where they had some good years and they kept a really good core together and they said, all right, we're fine. And they didn't go out and try to improve, while other teams in said division went out and significantly improved. I mean, that's just not going to work. And then when other team, Chicago, continues to improve and Minnesota does nothing but stay stagnant slash get worse, yeah. Now, that being said, did we expect them to win the division? No. Did we expect them to put up a fight? Yes. Did we expect
them to be where the Mariners are.
I expected them to finish third in that division. If they had a really good year, best case scenario, maybe they finish second. But, you know, if for a team like the Royals to finish ahead of them in this division, let's be real, that shouldn't happen. I don't care that you have Salvador Perez. Who else on that team besides maybe Brady Singer is all that great? And Whit Merrifield.
Hey, they're leading the league in stolen bases. Oh. They're playing small ball.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. I'll give them that.
Love some small ball.
Still, like, there's no reason this Minnesota Twins team should have just stayed stagnant and tried to not improve when you saw what the White Sox are doing. There's no reason they should be finishing below the Tigers and Royals. Okay? That's not to diminish what the Tigers have going for them in terms of their young talent that's coming up, that they could maybe be good coming up soon. But there's no reason the Tigers should be outperforming you right now as things stand. The Twins are definitely not performing to the standard they should be, for sure. We need to move on, though, now. Real quick, the AL MVP race. This Ohtani versus Vladimir Guerrero Jr. debate. Who has the edge? Tom, start us off.
Shohei Ohtani, because the edge is that he can also pitch. I mean, don't get me wrong. Vladdy is having an absolutely incredible year, and if Shohei Ohtani was not also at least B-plus pitcher, he would win the MVP. If he won the Triple Crown, there's a real argument. I don't think he's going to catch up in RBIs, but he's still going to have a fantastic year, and it's going to be a very, very well-fought second place. But as far as I'm concerned, how can you not give it to Shohei Ohtani? I mean, the man is out there. He probably will not win the Home Run Derby race. He's kind of, I think we've reached the point where he's kind of gassed himself out a bit. But he was a very good pitcher and a fantastic hitter for 89% of the season so far. He's doing stuff that hasn't happened since when Babe Ruth was very young. I mean,
even stuff that Babe Ruth never did. Let's put that out there too.
Yeah, I mean, like, it really is a case of, while statistically Vladdy might look a little better on paper, paper doesn't give you the story of what Shohei Ohtani is doing, and unfortunately will probably never do again, and you have to reward that.
My big issue with this, you know, you already know my answer to start off with. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Shohei, come on. Anyway, Vladdy Jr., it's very unfortunate for Vladdy Jr. because he's having a triple crown kind of year. He can win the triple crown. He still has a chance to win the triple crown this year. And a lot of people are not even looking his way in the MVP discussions because Shohei Ohtani. I mean, it's very unfortunate for him, but when you have a guy who's hitting 40 plus home runs while also pitching a 3.36 ERA. I said at the beginning of the year that if Ohtani pitches around a 3 ERA with 100 plus innings, he's guaranteed MVP. And to give credit to Vladdy Jr., he's making it kind of hard to make it guaranteed, but it's still, you can't not give it to Ohtani. Although Vladdy should, you know, Vladdy's very good. Guys, why is he so good?
I think in a normal Ohtani-less year, it's a shoo-in. It's Vladdy, no doubt. But I'm going to echo the sentiments of you guys that it's definitely Shohei because of what he's doing. I mean, context matters. And there are people who say that, oh, you won a triple crown, you should win MVP. And I think 9 times out of 10, yeah, that's the case. But a triple crown is only 3 stats. It doesn't encompass everything. And that's the other thing, too, is people are also going to lean on team success way too much in an MVP race. There are the people who say, well, the Blue Jays are good and the Angels are not. Okay, and? Like, where would the Angels be without Shohei? Could the Blue Jays still be a playoff caliber team without Vladdy? Not as much, but sure. And I just think that, like you guys said, you look at what Shohei has done, and it's stuff that has not been done since Babe Ruth or even ever, right? Even stuff that Babe Ruth didn't do when he was still doing the whole dual threat thing. You look at a guy who's putting up, when you look at a guy who's putting up 44 home runs, you know, yeah, he's batting 258. Okay, but he's also, you know, going out there every sixth or so day and pitching five, six, seven innings and very effectively. If you look at him as just a batter, no, he's not winning any awards. If you look at him as just a pitcher, no, he's not winning any awards. But the fact of the matter is, he's a, as a batter, an exceptional hitter. He's having a fantastic season at the plate. He's also having a pretty good season on the mound. And the fact that he's able to, whether he's on the dish or at the dish or on the bump, either way, he steps onto that field, whether he's pitching or hitting, or fielding even, because a few times he's played in the outfield, when he steps on the field, he is going to perform, and he's giving your team a chance to win. Every day, he's doing that, and he's doing it in a versatile way. More versatile than literally any other player in the league. That, to me, is most valuable.
There's one other thing that hasn't been touched on. Because he's not just a dual threat. He's a triple threat.
Oh yeah, the stolen bases.
Because he is top 10 in stolen bases.
Yeah.
As, well, hold on, you gotta do it right. As a pitcher! But this man has hit 40 plus homers, has just shy of 25 steals, and a 3.28 ERA. Done. We'll see you next year. He might win next year's with this season again.
I mean, and that's what makes this so absurd, is like, there's a legitimate argument to be made that this is the greatest season any individual player has ever put up, just because of everything that he's doing. He may not be doing any one thing to an elite level, but everything he's done has been very good. It doesn't need to be elite. He doesn't need to be A-plus at everything if he's anywhere from the B-plus to A-minus range on everything.
And I'd argue as a hitter, he is elite this year.
Yeah.
The average might not be there for the top guys, but he's top 5 OPS, 44 homers. Will probably, if he does finish out the season hitting as much as he has, he'll probably finish with 100-plus RBIs.
Right. And, like, if the only thing you're lacking there is the average, but you've got everything else, I can accept a batting average between 250 and 260 for a guy who's giving me six quality innings on the mound every six or so days, but is also hitting also over 40 home runs and knocking in over 100 runs. Like, you
in
can.
In fairness, I'd tolerate a 250 batting average for somebody if they gave me six quality innings throughout the entire season.
And hitting 40 home runs.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I understand the argument for Vladdy. I understand there's more of an argument for him if he does pull out the Triple Crown, which at this point I don't think is going to happen. And the fact that he could pull that off and that's not getting as much coverage as it really should is absurd. But Shohei's overtaking all of that. And to me, that says something. I mean, he was one of Time's most 100 top 100 influential people in the world this year. There's a reason for that. And this is the best thing that could happen to baseball right now. Shohei is MVP. Just in every sense of all of those words. But
case closed. Next.
Yes. So, one last thing before our triple play and we get out of here. We love hot takes. Let's be bold. We only know three teams in the playoffs, but screw it. Give us your World Series matchup, guys. Josh, real quick, you give us our two teams first.
Unfortunately, I think the Dodgers are going to make. The Dodgers are going to make the World Series again. It might be a rematch because Tampa Bay is still looking solid. Tampa Bay is looking really solid, and they are solidly on top of this extremely tough division of the AL East that we keep talking about. So I think it's going to be a rematch of last year. It might be Tampa Bay and Dodgers.
I really don't want to pick the Dodgers, even though I think it's them. But I'm going to make the case that I believe the Brewers can make the World Series. Now, it's going to be tough with, you know, a lineup that isn't to the level of what the Dodgers are bringing to the table. But they have something that will always give you a chance, which is elite pitching. And they can, quite frankly, do something that no other team can, which is potentially outpitch the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that gives them, quite frankly, they're easily the team with the best chance to beat them in the NLCS. So I'm going to just, for the sake of it, say that the Brewers are going to make it. And then I'm going to choose the White Sox to play against them. And what would be the probably least watched World Series in the last 50 years? Well, maybe 05. But, like, I think that would be one heck of an interesting matchup. And, I mean, the White Sox, they've kind of just got everything clicking on about fifth gear. And then I'm just banking on the fact that they're going to save it up for the playoffs and really, you know, kick into an extra high gear.
Yeah. I don't know. You know what? Since this isn't even the official picks anyway, because the official one happens when the postseason starts, screw it. I'll give you a World Series that might even be watched less than yours. All right, let's say Toronto.
I knew
and
Seattle was going to show up.
No, it wasn't Seattle. I misspoke. I'm sorry. It's Toronto and San Fran. Why not? Just because the Giants win games and Toronto's getting hot. So screw it. Who knows? But I mean, realistically speaking, the most likely answers on paper, yeah, it's Tampa and LA, sure. But, you know, let's
I'm
be
sorry
fun.
For going for the most boring pick, guys. I'm sorry.
Let's be fun. I'll say Toronto and San Fran just because that'd be fun.
I actually don't think that Tampa should be the favorites in the AL.
I mean,
record makes it look that way, but, like, when I'm looking at their team, I'm like, who in the playoffs is going to win them games? Like, I know that the Rays, they do things differently, but I think if they match up with the Astros again, it's going differently than it did last year.
That's fair.
I mean, who's going to win them games? Probably the same people who wins them games last year. It's just going to be people we never heard of, and they're just going to have amazing performances in the playoffs.
Hey, Aaron Loop is on a different team now.
We also have to keep in mind, though, as it stands right now, the Rays get the winner of the wild card game, which who the hell knows who that's going to be. But, I mean, play out, there's a really good chance that's another AL East team. And, yeah, the Rays tend to own the Yankees recently, but if it's the Blue Jays or the Red Sox, who knows?
You haven't watched the last 2 months, have you? They obliterated the Red Sox. That's how they have that lead. I think
Tampa's
they beat
obliterated
us like
everyone in
games.
This division. That's one of my main reasons. I think they beat anyone out of this division because they have for this entire season. And I know the playoffs are different, but there's no indication to me that Boston, Toronto, or the Yankees can beat Tampa.
That's why I don't think it'll be one of them.
You know what? Fair enough.
That's why I think they lose in the ALCS.
Fair enough. All right, well, real quick before we get out of here, let's turn a triple play. Tom, I'll send it to you first as our lovely guest host. What you got? Out number one.
I'm just going to, because I also kind of wanted to mention them for surprise of game, I just want to give a shout out to the Colorado Rockies, who were supposed to be like Pirates level of bad, especially because we all thought they were going to trade away the story, which they still should have, don't get me wrong. But just shout out to them for being, as I said before, only 9.5 games back in the wild card. I mean, they're not going to do anything with that. But to be even above 400, yeah, I think is a fantastic achievement for a team that was, you know, quite frankly, expected to be where the Diamondbacks are.
So shout out to the Rockies for being watchable. Good for you guys.
Yeah.
Hey, that's more than people expected.
So to cap off this AL East heavy show, here's a fact about the AL East. They are the only division where each park has a different suffix. So you have Tropicana Field, you have Rogers Center, Fenway Park, Yankee Stadium, and Camden Yards. You're welcome.
Oh, wow. I mean, fact. Isn't it technically Oriole Park at Camden Yards?
Shut up!
Yeah. But the last part is Camden
Still, cool
Yards.
Fact.
That's pretty neat. I never really noticed that. I'm gonna touch on the no-hitters because this one's twofold for me. First, with the combined Brewers no-hitter, we now have 9 no-hitters, official no-hitters, on the season, which sets the record in the MLB for most no-hitters in a season. This also leads to a subtext that 3 of those no-hitters came against Cleveland, which is also a record. They've been no-hit the most times ever in a season as a team. But what's even more absurd than that is the fact that all 3 of the no-hitters in which Cleveland suffered, Zach Plesac was the starting pitcher, which also an MLB
poor
record.
Zach. The poor bastard.
And what's crazy is only one of those starts was bad. The April 14th one against the White Sox, Carlos Rodon, the near-perfect game, right? He lasted less than an inning. Not good. What? May 8th, okay? He threw 8 shutout innings against the Cincinnati Reds and struck out 7. But Wade Miley outdueled him. And then September 11th, hashtag never forget, Plesac was good enough to win on most nights. I'm reading this New York Times article. He allowed only 3 runs, 2 of which were earned. But that wasn't enough to hold off Corbin Burns and Josh Hader. My man has pitched his heart out on 2 of these 3 nights and has lost on all 3.
Hey, next time somebody complains about the Mets not giving DeGrom anyone support, I'm just going to point them to that. Nobody has it worse than Zach Lil Dan Plesac.
It's crazy enough that there have been 9 official no-hitters this year. It's even wilder to consider the fact that 3 of those...
Do you remember when we were... when we talked on here before about the pace that we were at the beginning of the year?
Yeah.
And the pace was something like, what, we were going to get 15 or something like that?
Sounds right.
Might have been 18. And then we all said, oh no, we think we'll get like 8 or 9. Well, we're here.
And there's still time for a 10th.
There's still two and a half weeks left.
I think we can squeeze in 10 no-hitters in 2 weeks. I think we can do that.
I mean, think we're going to get one in the playoffs.
That would be fun.
Yeah, if the Braves or the Phillies are in the playoffs, yeah, you'll probably get one.
Oh, imagine like a wild card perfect game.
I would love that.
That's something that would happen to the Reds, given their performance last year.
Shut up. Look, man, I just want us to not be the last team to be no hit in the playoffs. That would be great.
Too bad.
Also,
I got it. The Rays in game 2 of the ALDS. If you heard it here first, this is going to be a Tuiasa Sobo call.
Oh, God.
The Rays in the second game of the ALDS against whatever AL East opponent they're facing will throw a combined no-hitter with at least 4 pitchers. There's your hot take.
Tom, if you're correct, I don't know what I would do.
I'll give you something. I don't know what I'll give you, but I'll give you something.
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
bet to be named later.
Yeah, like
prize to be named later.
At that point, I think you just need to go buy like 20 lottery tickets.
No, I went to the Lego store today. They have like a little Lego trophy, so maybe I'll get you that.
I would gladly accept a Lego trophy from you. I'll put it on the dashboard of my car.
There you go. Oh man, I can't think of a of a more perfect way to end this episode. So there we go. Tom, as always, thank you for joining us, and for Tom and Josh, and just thank you for tuning into this episode. We'll catch you next time on the Triple Play Podcast. I'm your host, Wyatt Street. We'll see you next time. Until then, we are out of here. It's a